This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is Jeff T from the Club 520 podcast. When it comes to your feet, eBay's got your back. When you see the blue check mark that says authenticity guaranteed, that means real experts are checking your sneakers. Every stitch, down to the sole. They even smell them because nothing says fresh like the scent of real kicks. So kick back and relax. From the drop to your doorstep, eBay doesn't play games with your sneaker game. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal with eBay authenticity guaranteed. Visit eBay.com for terms.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Which pass catchers are breaking out this season? Let's talk to the pros. Hello, everybody, and welcome into another episode of the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. My name is Ryan Wormley. For those who haven't heard me much over the offseason, I do social media here at Fantasy Pros and occasionally fill in for Joey P. And you will notice, for those watching on YouTube, that is why I'm wearing a Hawaiian shirt today, because Joe is on vacation. So my clothing choice was to honor him, and I'm filling in as host for this week. Joining me today is the dynamic duo of Andrew Erickson and Derek Brown. D-Bro, how has your weekend been?
It's been good, man, outside of getting trolled by Joe in our Slack with just sending me pictures of Harry Potter World, which, have fun, Joe. Love you. Don't love those pictures, but I hope you're having a good time, man. But outside of that, it's a good weekend.
That's good to hear. Erickson, you were telling us a little pre-show about your weekend, some momentous things going on.
Yep, looking for a wedding venue for 2024. So we're planning out very well in advance. We can make sure we find a place that we really like. But yeah, that's kind of what my summer is going to be consistent of, you know, hopping on this podcast, doing fantasy football research, and trying to find a wedding venue for 2024. So it's going to be fun.
That's a heck of a summer. You guys didn't ask, but yes, my co-ed softball team did win our league championship this weekend. And yes, I played very well. I hit two over-the-fence home runs, one in the park home run, another ball off the top of the fence. So it was a pretty good weekend for me as well. As always, I want to make sure the listeners can find the three of us online. Erickson's Twitter handle is at Andrew Erickson _. D-Bro is at D-Bro _FFB. And I can be found at Ryan Wormley. That's Wormley like how you dress when it's cold outside. And of course, we can be found everywhere online at Fantasy Pros. I do want to mention an awesome prize Fantasy Pros is giving away to you, the listeners. We've got a free signed Javonte Williams helmet giveaway over at fantasypros.com/contest right now. All our listeners have to do is subscribe to our YouTube channel, youtube.com/fantasypros. Take a screenshot, submit it at fantasypros.com/contest to have a chance to win. You've only got a couple of days left, so just make sure you enter before the end of June. I also want to remind everyone about our Fantasy Pros Discord server, where we've got channels to talk about trades, draft strategies, player debates, and fun off-topic stuff as well. So much more. Plus, premium subscribers gain access to dozens of extra channels, including AMAs and live stages events with all the Fantasy Pros analysts, even D-Bro and Erickson. Guys, let's jump into our breakout candidates. Today we're talking about wide receiver breakouts and tight end breakouts. We're going to start with the receivers. Now, obviously, there are plenty of ways that you can define a breakout in today's landscape. For the purposes of the conversation today, we're going to say that it's the player most likely to move up to the next tier or more throughout the course of this season. We're going to start with tier 2 in the wide receivers. D-Bro, who do you have?
It's CeeDee Lamb season, baby. I'm all in. I think that there are so many different parts and pieces to like about CeeDee Lamb. First of all, we know that he's never gotten a massive target share in this Dallas offense. 20%, 18% in his two seasons. This could be the year where he steps into that 25, 26% range and really balls out. Because we know Dallas is going to do two things, definitively. They're going to throw the ball a lot. They're going to run at a high pace. And when you have CeeDee Lamb, who now has this clear runway with no Amari Cooper, and as a player that can win both outside and inside, he was top 20 in yards per route run versus zone coverage, right ahead of Mike Williams and Stephon Diggs. As well as, if you go over to reception perception and you look at Matt Harmon's work, 91st percentile versus man, 82nd percentile versus press. So whether it's Lamb in the slot dominating linebackers and nickel corners, or he's on the outside and he's just bullying dudes, I think he can crush it and step into an elite type of tier one season in 2022.
Yeah, I mean, CeeDee Lamb to me, if you were asking any player not in tier one currently has the best chance of being not just a tier up, but in tier one next season, I think he's the obvious choice for everything you just said. There's no real competition for targets. He obviously is a monster. He has the pedigree as, you know, a former top prospect. There's just so much going into this season that it would almost at this point be a surprise if he wasn't a tier one wide receiver going into next year. Erickson, do you agree?
No, I think that is an accurate take, Ryan. Great call by you. I think that Lamb, what we've seen from Lamb so far is he's been good, but hasn't been great yet. Like, we're kind of waiting for him to take that next step. And it makes a lot of sense based on the kind of how things were laid out by D-Bro that this is the opportunity. He's a third year receiver. We see a lot of breakouts in this season. It's usually because guys leave. You know, Amari Cooper is gone. And the biggest thing with Lamb last year was just the target share was really low across the board in the Dallas offense. So even if Dallas takes a step back as a whole on offense, I mean, Lamb is going to be the guy that's going to be leading the team in targets. So yeah, I think that Lamb is probably going to be up in tier one next year.
Just to read through the whole tier before we get to Erickson's pick, tier two right now in half point PPR, Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs, CeeDee Lamb, who is ranked sixth overall in half point PPR, Deebo Samuel, Mike Evans, and Tyreek Hill. Which one of those guys, Erickson, are you picking for your breakout?
I think for me, it's Mike Evans, and I'm really contemplating moving him up into tier one, you know, in my redraft rankings, because you're looking at the situation in Tampa Bay. There is no Chris Godwin to start the season. There is no Rob Gronkowski to start the season. Mike Evans, I mean, Featured Pros had a hot take thing for me this morning. And of course, I used the low hanging fruit and went with Cortland Sutton. And after I thought about it, as I was kind of researching for this podcast, I was like, you know what? I should have taken Mike Evans, like, breaks the touchdown record. Like, that's what I should have done as my hot take, because that's in a, you know, 99th percentile range of outcomes for Evans, because there's not a lot of mouths that Tom Brady needs to feed. Mike Evans has Tom Brady's trust. You look at him last year without Godwin or Antonio Brown in the lineup at the end of 2021, 27% target share. Last year, he caught half of his touchdowns in games without Gronk. And in the three games that Antonio Brown and Gronk both didn't play in, Evans caught five touchdowns in three games. Like, we know Mike Evans is a touchdown machine. And you can look at, okay, he's 29 years old. You know how old Randy Moss was when he broke the touchdown record with Tom Brady? 30. So Mike Evans, he gets 1,000 yards every single year. He's going to catch double-digit touchdowns. I don't see why we're not looking at him as, just lock and load him. And then you just deal with whatever guys come back, you deal with it. But Evans has always been a boom or bust guy. Never really someone that's always had a really high target share. But you have the touchdowns that we know are going to happen in this offense. We were talking about Cameron Brate before the pod. Look, Brady trusts Mike Evans. And I know that Cameron Brate had a bunch of red zone targets last year, but it did not turn into touchdown production. That's not going to be the case with Evans. So I think Mike Evans is someone I need to start just moving up in general.
Yeah, obviously, if he has a 30 touchdown season, which it sounds like you're predicting, Erickson, he will clearly be a tier one guy. But I was really surprised when you sent over his name before the show. I think part of that is just because when you think about the phrase breakout, you think of probably a young up-and-comer, which he is not. But you're right. There's a ton of opportunity there. He's ranked eighth in half-point PPR rankings right now. D-Bro, are you as bullish on Evans as Erickson is?
I like Evans a lot. There are a few things to be a little bit concerned on his profile, considering his yards per route run had declined over the last few seasons. So he's kind of slowing down. But for all the reasons Erickson gave, I mean, you have to love it for a Mike Evans. Because, no, with all the other parts or pieces there, we haven't seen Mike Evans consistently get a 25, 26% target share. We know the touchdown production is there. The other part or piece that I want to see this year for Mike Evans, And they've done this a little bit, considering some of the cornerback matchups he saw last year. They moved Mike Evans into the slot more. Dude, if we get like 45% slot with Mike Evans, like Chris Godwin is out, then yeah, it could be wheels up, because Mike Evans against nickel corners and linebackers, oh, it's game over, dude.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, D-Bro, to bring up, because I think a lot of people are pegging in Russell Gage to kind of take on the entire slot role, when he showed last year that Gage could play both outside and inside. So maybe they don't really have one primary slot receiver. They use a bunch of different guys, and that includes Mike Evans.
So of the other guys in Tier 2, before we move on, I just want to ask about Devontae Adams, because to me, he seems, again, when you think of breakout, he's not necessarily the up-and-comer, and he is, of course, leaving the Aaron Rodgers-led offense, but he has rapport with Derek Carr, and he has been a Tier 1 guy the most times out of anybody that's currently in Tier 2. Clearly, there's no doubt at all about the talent or anything like that. Is it purely just not trusting Derek Carr that keeps him from being your choice here, Erickson?
I think for me, it's Devontae Adams. I think that we saw the best of him with Aaron Rodgers. Like, I'm sorry, like Derek Carr is not better than Aaron Rodgers. And you mentioned rapport from 10 years ago. You know who Derek Carr has rapport with that I saw last year? Hunter Renfrow, Darren Waller, guys he's actually played with in the past century, like in the last 10 years. Like, how many people do you know from college that you have like this great rapport with that you could just like, oh, like let's go throw touchdowns together. Like, it'll be perfect. And I get that they're friends, and but I think it's being overblown. Like, Rodgers and Devontae Adams had one of the, if not the most special connection ever. Like Gronkowski and Tom Brady. Like, it was on that level where Gronkowski could have gone to any other team and he would have been worse. Like, in my mind. And that's what happened to Devontae Adams. So I think that's fair that he's not in Tier 1, because he's a Tier 1 fantasy receiver with Rodgers. And any other quarterback that's not Rodgers, even though Derek Carr, I think, is underrated, still not Aaron Rodgers.
So according to Erickson, I had a good point on CeeDee Lamb, but an overblown point on Derek Carr and Devontae Adams. I'm one for two.
Coming after you.
Let's move to Tier 3. I'll run through these names here before D-Bro gives us his choice. A.J. Brown, Keenan Allen, T. Higgins, Michael Pittman Jr., Deontay Johnson, Jalen Waddle, D.J. Moore, and Terry McLaurin. That is Tier 3 in half-point PPR rankings. D-Bro, who is your choice to break out?
Well, I could have gone with A.J. Brown here, because I love him and I have him ranked very aggressively, but we're talking about low-hanging fruit. Erickson's going to be talking about Sutton, because that's what happens. His heart is beating. He's breathing. I'm going to be talking about Michael Pittman. I'm all in, and I don't really understand how anybody could sit here and have this downside case scenario unless you're looking at last year's results and just marrying that into, well, that's what's going to happen again this year. Okay, well, fine. Let's talk about last year. In the first few weeks of the season, weeks 1 through 6, the Colts were 8th in neutral script passing rate. After that time, this team was 5th in neutral rushing rate. They got a quarterback upgrade. Carson Wentz is not there. And I'm sorry, Matt Ryan is better than him. And so those factors, I think, one, the Colts are going to pass more. Two, we're going to see another evolution of Michael Pittman's game. And he was really good last year. And he was barely outside of already stepping up another tier. He should be ranked higher than what he is right now. Like, I have him as a wide receiver 1. And I don't understand, like, anybody, like, saying, okay, we should fade him because you're living off of last year's results. Michael Pittman was 4th in route win rate last year, 8th in win rate versus man, so he could play outside, play inside, and he was 19th in yards per route run. Yeah, the breakout's coming. He is jumping up a tier this year. It's going to happen, guys.
Yeah, Pittman, I almost responded to you when you sent over this name and said, pick somebody else because he's too obvious. But sometimes the obvious answer is the right one. And it, again, similar to CeeDee Lamb, it's almost hard to imagine, given everything we know about the position and what we've seen from him, quarterback upgrade, all of that, it's almost hard to imagine him not at least being a Tier 2 receiver this season. So obviously it's a great pick. Erickson, you can't pick Sutton just yet. We're still a tier away. So who are you taking in Tier 3?
It's blasphemy that Sutton's not even in this tier by the consensus. He's in my top tier, but yeah, we'll wait for Cortland Sutton. So I agree with the A.J. Brown that D-Bro kind of hit at the beginning. I think that the Eagles just, they may not throw a lot more in next year, but it's in their range of outcomes with the like with the Titans were never going to become a pass first team ever. Like they've never done that with Mike Vrabel and Derrick Henry there. It was never going to happen. Or at least the Eagles showed us last year at the beginning that they can dial up the passing game. So that makes me more hopeful for AJ Brown to take another step into being an elite receiver. So I went with Terry McLaurin here, and we were talking about Michael Pittman, how much we liked him from last year. Well, Carson Wentz was his quarterback, and is Carson Wentz some needle mover type of quarterback? No, but he's still better than what Washington had last year at quarterback. And that's like the biggest thing to take away with McLaurin. I'm always talking about chasing guys on good offenses, chasing wide receivers with quarterback upgrades. And I don't think enough people are considering the fact that McLaurin got a clear-cut quarterback upgrade. Carson Wentz threw 27 passing touchdowns last year and 7 picks. Like, that's good. Like, 27 touchdowns and 7 interceptions? Like, you said that for Carson Wentz. You're like, the way people talk about Wentz, he threw 15 interceptions and like 20 touchdowns, which is what the Washington football team did last year at quarterback.
Well, it's because the ugly interceptions are so memorable.
Yes, but they still only count as one interception or two interceptions. And if you look at him last year, just as a fantasy producer, speaking to Wentz, finished as a top 10 quarterback 6 times. That was equal or better to Derek Carr, Ryan Tannehill. Thought experiment, guys. Let's think for a second. What if the Raiders traded for Terry McLaurin instead of Davante Adams? Would we be viewing, I think the clear consensus would be, oh my God, McLaurin's got Derek Carr. He's got, you know, a brand new quarterback. Carson Wentz did not put up very different numbers from Derek Carr last year from a fantasy perspective. So there's a guy that can definitely supplement production from McLaurin to kind of get him out of the wide receiver 2 range and kind of move him up to the back end of a wide receiver 1. You look at Carson Wentz from a deep passing perspective, which McLaurin has had terrible deep ball passers throughout his career. Number 7 per Next Gen Stance of deep ball passing, Carson Wentz. Taylor Heineke, oh my God, dude. You know, I don't even need to pull up the stats because you just watched that guy throw the ball deep last year. It was horrible. Just absolutely atrocious. McLaurin's like, where's the ball? Okay. Yeah, no shot. So I think that Wentz and McLaurin are being a little bit underrated. And I think that we could see a step. And also, you know, maybe McLaurin gets traded. You know, he ends up on a contender. And then you're like, boom, like wheels up because we know he's talented.
So we actually have a Terry McLaurin question in the mailbag later. I'm just going to bring it up now while we're talking about him. At @DaEquinoxFF asks, what's the price check on Terry McLaurin? Is he worth a first round pick in 2023? And for the record, the most recent trade chart on fantasypros.com says yes, unless the pick is top 3 in a super flex. All other first round picks are valued as lower or equal to what Terry McLaurin is right now in the trade chart. So Erickson, would you trade a first rounder for him?
Yeah, if it wasn't a top 3 pick, I think that I would. I'm always trying to buy talent in Dynasty. McLaurin is a talented receiver. He has a contract, you know, dispute going on, so we don't know if he's going to be tied to Washington. I mean, if I'm trading for him in Dynasty, I dear hope to the Lord that he's not going to be in Washington for much longer. Hopefully he goes to a better team with a better quarterback. So yeah, he would be someone that I would definitely be interested in buying.
Yeah, it's not even as much a Wentz thing as it is just I don't trust Washington in general as a franchise. D-Bro, are you trading a first rounder for McLaurin?
Yeah, I mean, unless, like, everything we've already discussed previously, I mean, unless it's a top 3, top 5 pick, I'd be giving away a first. But I mean, even if it's in the middle of the round, I think it's fine to give that up for Terry McLaurin. We know that the target share is going to be there. As bad as Carson Wentz is, we look for these ceiling in these spike weeks. He could still throw the deep ball amongst the best in the league. So, are those outcomes there for Terry McLaurin, even if it is Carson Wentz throwing in the ball for the next 2 seasons, 3 seasons? Yeah, absolutely. I give up the first for McLaurin.
I think there's some consensus within tier 3 on the other guys. I want to ask you guys, no explanation, just give me the name. Deontay Johnson, Jalen Waddle, DJ Moore, they're back-to-back-to-back in this tier. Which one of those guys do you want, Erickson?
I'm going to go with Jalen Waddle.
D-Bro?
I'm going with Waddle, too.
All right, Waddle is currently behind Deontay Johnson, but ahead of DJ Moore in the half-point PPR rankings. Let's move to tier 4. I'm not going to read through all the names here because now we're in the territory where tiers are a little too big, but just some names in this tier. A lot of popular breakout candidates, Rashad Bateman, Darnell Mooney, Allen Robinson. Also some veterans in this tier, guys like Michael Thomas, Amari Cooper. D-Bro, who is your choice in this tier to break out?
For me, it's Mike Williams. If you look at last season's stats, and I've already talked about this previously on social media and stuff, I think Mike Williams outscores Keenan Allen this year. And we talked about wide receivers slowing down. Keenan Allen, his yards per route run have quietly decreased in each of the last 5 seasons. Whereas we got a snippet of Mike Williams performing as an alpha last year. Weeks 1 through 5, 25% target share. He was the freaking wide receiver 3 in fantasy. That's good. Just in case you're wondering at home, that's really good. And now we're talking about it's another year in the bag for Keenan Allen. Mike Williams also was top. If you look at him in win rates, yards per route run, all these different things, and yards after catch per reception, he's also top 20 in that. So we're looking at all the efficiency metrics scream that Mike Williams is still at the top of his game. If the target share flips a little bit more in his favor throughout the season, and he cements himself as that top option in a top 5 offense in the NFL and the chart for the Chargers, yeah, he's going to crush this year.
From week 6 to week 16, he had one game with 100 yards and one game with a touchdown. Does that inconsistency in the heart of the fantasy season scare you at all?
Nope, it doesn't scare me because he was banged up through part of that, and people could talk about the injuries and how he plays the game, the contested catches. We saw his game evolve, and he wasn't used in that downfield clasher role throughout the entirety of last year, and he actually rebounded. So like after week 12, rebounded to a 20% target share. He was the wide receiver 17 after week 12. So I'm not concerned about it. I think that I'm more willing to buy into the snippet that we saw at the beginning of the season than the lull he had while he was dealing with injuries during the middle of the season.
Mike Williams currently ranked 21st overall at the position in half point PPR. Before we move on with the show, I'd like to talk to you a little bit about Pristine Auction. I know the listeners are hoping to win some of the cool gear we're giving away with the help of our friends at Pristine Auction, but those aren't the only amazing deals over on the site. They've got daily auctions with hundreds of items of cool swag that is perfect for any fan cave, for fans or fantasy managers of any player. They guarantee authenticity, and just as important, it's affordable. Most people think cool gear like this is beyond their means, but the truth is, a lot of these items are much more affordable than you might think. Cortland Sutton is one of the most popular breakout candidates in fantasy right now, and he's had multiple signed jerseys and helmets go for under $100 on the site just this month. And they've got tons more on the site where it's quick and free to register and also free to bid. When you head to the site, enter Fantasy Pros, all one word, in the registration code field located at the top of the page. It's totally free, and when you use the code, you'll get a free $5 credit. So sign up at pristineauction.com today. Again, that's P-R-I-S-T-I-N-E auction.com. Erickson, we all know who your pick is here. Let's just get this out of the way.
Yep, so my pick is Cortland Sutton here in tier
4. Whoa, what an
upset.
I did not see that coming.
Yeah, it's absolutely wild. I've been trying to shape and remold the take through different means. So I'm actually going to be coming to Sutton's defense here because the argument against Sutton, for the most part, is talking about how Jerry Jeudy out-targets Sutton when Jeudy came back from his injury last year. 100% accurate. He did. Sutton's target share absolutely tanked. But I want to provide some context to those specific numbers. There were two quarterbacks that played for Denver during that time. Teddy Bridgewater started the majority of the games, and Drew Lock finished up the season the last three games. Teddy Bridgewater was the quarterback there. We knew going into last season that Teddy Bridgewater and Cortland Sutton were not a good fit. We knew that. That's why I liked Jerry Jeudy more last year, because I knew Teddy Bridgewater, or I thought Teddy Bridgewater, was going to be the quarterback. So, of course Jerry Jeudy is the more targeted receiver as the finesse route runner near the line of scrimmage. Do you think Teddy Bridgewater is looking to launch the ball down the field? No. So, it makes sense to me that Jerry Jeudy led the team in targets. And what did he do with that? Nothing. Like, he had zero production to show for it. Whereas Sutton, at least during the beginning of the season when he was commanding a high target share, was actually putting up fantasy points. Like, that's why I like Sutton more than Jeudy, because Sutton has shown that he can score fantasy points. Like, it can be that simple. And when you're looking at Russell Wilson doesn't necessarily always gravitate towards one guy. And DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett, it's been pretty split. Like, those have been the top two guys, and it's really been pretty close. But the thing that's the difference in what you want for fantasy is the high value touches. And that's Cortland Sutton. Red zone targets. Cortland Sutton, 2019, had the highest target rate inside the 10-yard line for wide receivers. He led the Broncos wide receivers in red zone targets in 2021. Last year, a Seattle wide receiver has finished top 5 in red zone targets for the past 3 straight seasons. For the past 3 straight seasons, the Seattle Seahawks, top 5 in touchdown red zone conversion rate. Denver, over that same time, has never finished better than 21st. So even if Sutton and Jeudy have the same exact target share, which I think is not crazy to think about if they're the two best receivers on the team, Sutton is still going to be the one that's going to catch more touchdowns and be used in the red zone. And even when Jeudy was out targeting Sutton, Sutton had more air yards. So I don't understand that, yeah, okay, Jeudy had more targets when Teddy Bridgewater was the quarterback. Like, that's going to be your main argument against fading Sutton when Sutton has the production, has the red zone usage, has the air yards usage. So for me, that's why I still lean towards Sutton. And I think there's points in every draft where I still look at Jeudy because that's being separated a little bit in terms of ADP. And when I draft against sharp drafters, sometimes I take Sutton before I do, and then I'm very sad. So I have to sometimes look to Jeudy as another option. But I don't think it's particularly close between the two guys. And I know I've talked about Sutton kind of being this year's Cooper Kupp, and I always had trouble trying to contextualize that take because people hear it and be like, oh, you think he's going to be the wide receiver one overall? And I don't think that. He's really more of a middle range wide receiver that could potentially take a big leap and be a league winner for you. But I think that the take I want to actually have is Courtland Sutton leads the NFL in red zone targets because that's what Cooper Kupp did last year. And when you lead the NFL in red zone targets, it's really easy to put up fantasy numbers. So that's my Sutton. That's my Sutton bit.
Courtland Sutton is ranked 22nd among wide receivers in half-point PPR right now.
That's absolutely blasphemous.
When I wrote down in the notes, you know, all your picks, I wrote Erickson, Courtland Sutton, parentheses, duh, before you even sent me the names. So that one was to be expected, but some good reasoning there. Let's move to tier five. This is the sort of wide receiver 2/3 range, but with some real upside here, and some guys, a lot of upside. There are names like Elijah Moore, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Drake London, Tyler Lockett. D-Bro, who's your pick?
Well, everybody's going to expect me to say Drake London here, but I feel like I've preached the good news about Drake London enough. I'm going to pivot a little bit and move back to Philadelphia. I want to go to Devonta Smith. And if you look at how Devonta Smith's year played out last year, it was honestly a little bit curious. I think he was used as the Eagles' deep threat last year. He was 6th in ADOT, 9th in deep targets. I think we see that change this year. And I think it's going to be for the betterment of Devonta Smith. And no, yes, we want the deep targets. I'm not saying that role totally goes away, but looking at how Philadelphia's offense can operate, I mean, I've talked about, I kind of like teased my love for A.J. Brown, but a little of that goes still to Devonta Smith. You look at last season, and I understand like the counting stats weren't there. I mean, the guy would have crossed 1,000 yards if they let him finish the final week of the season. So I think the narrative would have been a little bit different considering that. But again, talking about reception perception, 77th percentile versus man, 83rd versus zone, 84th versus press. This is good. He can win in all different facets. But I think how Devonta Smith's role changes this year is we see A.J. Brown eat into some of those deep targets, and that allows Smitty to just work underneath and just eat defenses up versus zone coverage. For a player who was 29th in yards per route run against zone coverage last year, I think he could be a target earner this year. And I'm not saying that he's going to lead Philadelphia in targets, but I think he could challenge A.J. Brown for that lead.
I'm not sure, unless I missed it, that you mentioned Jalen Hurts in that whole section. And he's kind of the biggest question mark, right? And it's not even, do you think he can be a better passer in general? It's, do you think he can be a better passer specific to the types of routes that we want to see Devonta Smith running? Does Hurts' development or potential lack thereof concern you with him at all? And I'm guessing the answer is no, since you picked him.
Nope. Everybody is so worried about Jalen Hurts, but the thing that they're missing is the context that he took a step forward as a passer over the final 6 to 7 starts he made last season. He was 13th in deep ball completion rate. He was also middle of the pack in PFF grades and a lot of other metrics that I care about. In that sense, I think another better offensive design this season, and we see them, one, throw more. Two, he's literally gotten better every single year he's played football, guys. Like, through college, he improved as a passer every single season. He left college as a top 20 passer at all three levels of the field. And yeah, you can go check the numbers, check the tweets. They're out there. They're on social media. Just search them. I put them out there a long time ago. And we've seen him take steps as a passer, both from the first year he was a starter and last year, even down the stretch. I think we're going to see another evolution of Jalen Hurts this upcoming season.
Smith is ranked 35th among wide receivers right now. Erickson, who's your pick in this tier?
Going with Buffalo Bills wide receiver Gabriel Davis, super polarizing wide receiver that really, I think that a lot of the sharp, you know, best ball players are on Gabriel Davis and are pushing his ADP up the boards. And I just don't think that's going to be that when it comes to like your home leagues. I think it's going to be a drastic difference between the two types of people that are drafting. And it reminds me a lot of when Will Fuller was kind of cemented to be the number one receiver in Houston and his ADP was really high in the summertime, you know, through expert leagues. And then in your home drafts, it's like, oh, Will Fuller in the seventh round? Like, oh, great. Like, that's kind of what the price I want to pay. And that's, I think, the price you're going to paying for a guy like Gabriel Davis will be. I know in a lot of mock drafts I've done on the Draft Wizard, shout out to the Draft Wizard, I've gotten Gabriel Davis in like the sixth or seventh round, and I feel really good about him in that range. And you look at him last year, basically before he started becoming after he became a full-time player in the offense, in PPR, he averaged almost 20 fantasy points per game in his last six games. Look, he ranks top five in the NFL in total end zone targets over the past two seasons, despite the fact that the dude has not been a full-time player. Like, he's had to work his way up the lineup between guys like John Brown, Emmanuel Sanders, Cole Beasley playing ahead of him, and that's why it took some time. And really, the fact that he was a fourth-round pick, like, that's to be expected of a player like Gabriel Davis. Because the Bills invested a day-three pick in him, they didn't need to play him right away. He had to earn his way to get playing time. And what he did last year and what he's done on the field when given opportunities, like, I don't see how you can't like him. As a guy with amazing upside in a offense that we all want pieces of, you know, targeting players on good offenses, Gabriel Davis fits that mold to a T, even if he's the number two guy. Oh, the number two guy to Stephon Diggs in Minnesota, Adam Thielen, oh, he was pretty good. And what did he do a lot of? Oh, catch a lot of touchdowns. And that's what you're going to see from Gabriel Davis, I think, at worst. I know that people are afraid because, you know, he's a fourth-round pick, and he doesn't have a very high target share in this offense, but now this is the first time he's going to be a full-time player in the Buffalo Bills offense. And I thought it was interesting. I was looking at the Boomer Bust report over on fantasypros.com and kind of looking at the Bills' numbers there. So he ran 200 fewer routes than Sanders and Beasley. And yet, at the same time, Gabriel Davis had the second-highest wide receiver three finish rate on the Bills. So he finished as a wide receiver three, a top 36 receiver in PPR, at a higher rate than Emmanuel Sanders and Cole Beasley did last year. So I think that's actually kind of telling of when you play in these high-powered offenses, your floor is actually a lot higher than you'd think. So I think that his floor is just going to be there naturally as like a top 36 receiver because he plays in the Bills offense. And then the ceiling is what we saw him do against the Chiefs. It's like, oh my God, like this guy could go toe-to-toe with Stephon Diggs, being a guy that just catches a bunch of touchdowns. He gets favorable looks because Diggs is on the other side. So for me, Gabriel Davis, I know that his best ball ADP is pretty high. It is definitely steep, and I think it's more of a conversation there. But in redraft leagues, I think you're going to be able to get him in like the sixth or seventh round, and I think you're going to feel really good about that.
Davis currently ranked 33rd at the position. Let's move to tier six. This is a group of veterans who have flashed at times in the past, but have never really been truly reliable weekly starters. We've also got some first-round rookies sprinkled into this tier. Some names like Christian Kirk, Tyler Boyd, Kenny Galladay, Chris Olave. Debra, who you got?
So this, we're talking about guys whose ADPs have kind of jumped up a little bit, but I think the breakout's still real, and I still don't think his ADP is quite high enough where it needs to be, and that's Russell Gage. We talked about loving Mike Evans. Why do people want to push back against Russell Gage? You don't like Cameron Brate. Gronk is gone. You don't like all the other wide receivers on this team. Chris Godwin, we have no clue when he's going to be back on the NFL field, much less going to be back to being Chris Godwin. Although, if you're looking at a lot of best ball drafts and ADP, he's starting to fall because people are catching up to this. We've been talking about this for weeks, guys. Like, you can go back to the hot take episode. Like, we're talking about breakout wide receivers. We've discussed him multiple times, and I'm not going to shut up about him now. Russell Gage is going to sit here and have a fantastic season inside of one of the NFL's best offenses. And last year, he proved that the talent is real inside of a broken offense. So now we're adding him to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, be top five in passing rate, top five in pace. They're going to have Tom Brady again throwing balls. Russell Gage last year, 11th in yards per route run against man, right ahead of Justin Jefferson and Devontae Adams. People need to take that in for a second. Ingest that. Let that context simmer inside of you and enjoy it because it's real. That talent is real. 17th in yards per route run overall. he was top 12 in route win rate. Now we're talking about he's being airdropped into one of the best offenses in the NFL, and people still don't want, like, they're like, I'm not going to chase the ADP. I don't think he's going to go up a tier. Why? Why? Tell me why. Inside of an offense that last year showed it could support three top wide receivers and Gronk and Leonard Fournette in the passing game. Now, a lot of those things are gone. They're changed. And Russell Gage is an efficient player. I really don't understand the hate, and I'm willing to chase the ADP because I think he's going to take the leap. I think that all of the signs and things that we want out of a breakout wide receiver are there.
I'm certainly not going to be the one to tell you why, dude, bro. Gage is currently ranked 46th among wide receivers. Erickson, who's your pick in this tier?
Well, I got a question for D-Bro. So how high would you be willing to take Russell Gage? Because we've seen this before. We've seen this play out where, you know, let's say an underrated wide receiver gets steamed up because of an opportunity in a Tom Brady-led offense. Now, let's not forget, 2018, I believe it was, Chris Hogan, former lacrosse player, was a round four pick because Julian Edelman got suspended, like, for the first 4 weeks of the season, I believe. And Hogan was literally going in fourth round alongside Josh Gordon. I mean, that's absolutely crazy, but those guys were on the Patriots at the same time. Like, fourth round Russell Gage, man. Like, there's a lot of breakout receivers. Like, would you pay that for Russell Gage?
I mean, right now in my ranks, I have Russell Gage as a top 30 wide receiver. I want to say I have him at, like, wide receiver 28. He's flirting with wide receiver 2 status. I'd be willing to pay the penny. I mean, I really think that, like, there's even some more meat on the bone. Like, put it this way. Tell me this, Erickson. Could you see in your mind's eye the range of outcomes that Russell Gage walks out of this season as a wide receiver 15 inside of Tampa Bay's offense?
Yeah, no, I could definitely see it, especially with, like, the front-loaded production. Like, I think that's the big thing with Russell Gage, especially in redraft, where you can literally grab him. If he's going in the seventh round, you can grab him and then start him until Chris Godwin comes back. And so it's just a matter of, like, will he be the guy that you need in league championships? Maybe not, but so much changes at that point. It's like, for week one, like, Russell Gage is going to be, we're going to probably rank him as a top 24 wide receiver when we do our week one rankings. I know we actually have to have those out, I believe. So I need to make sure I have Russell Gage in my top 24.
Well, and to your guys' point, while he might continue to move up and see the ADP rise in maybe some of the more expert or hardcore leagues, like Andrew was mentioning earlier, like, when you get into your home leagues, there's a very real chance that you're not going to have to take him as a wide receiver too, but you can still get that kind of production out of him. So definitely a good name to keep in mind. Erickson, who's your guy?
Yep. So my guy is Kadarius Toney from tier 6. And basically you're just chasing what he did in a very small sample size last year, you know, posted 2.14 yards per route run, which ranked 11th last year, 25% target rate per route run, tied for 7th best in the NFL. So Toney, you know, he flashed as a rookie. Like, that's kind of what we want. I didn't love him coming in as a prospect. They didn't really use him the right way at Florida. They kind of used him in this weird gadgety role. And I think that the thing with him that I like drafting him, especially in redraft, is, you know, week one, I feel like I'm going to kind of know, like, how they're using these Giants receivers. Like, I know Galladay is going to be posted on the outside. You know, Wanda Robinson was obviously a high draft pick for the Giants. So, you know, where is Toney lining up on the field? Like, are they feeding him targets like he got last year when he was a target magnet? And when you just look at the offense Brian Daboll is installing here in New York, okay, if he has Wandale is playing that Cole Beasley role in the slot as like a shorter slot receiver, you have Kenny Galladay playing in the Gabriel Davis role as this like ex big bodied red zone guy, what does that leave Toney as like the Stephon Diggs-esque player in this offense? So if that's Toney's role in an offense that I think can be a lot better, or fingers crossed, should be much better than it has been in the last 2 years of the Giants management, I think Toney has a lot of upside, and I think that we'll know pretty early on if it's going to happen or not, so you can cut bait with him if it's like, okay, this Giants offense is still a disaster, let's move on, find somebody else.
Toney currently ranked 48th among wide receivers. Let's go quickly to tier 7, mostly flyers and lottery picks in this tier, at least for redraft leagues. Van Jefferson, Curtis Samuel, George Pickens, guys that you could make a case for them, but you know, you don't really know what to expect. What's going to happen there? D-Bro, who's your choice here?
I mean, we're talking about late season hammers. Jameson Williams is the home run swing I want to take. I think that we're going to see an improved offense for the Lions. I'm just betting on talent. We don't know where he's at with the ACL, but for a player that was 13th in yards per route run against all collegiate receivers with 50 or more targets last year, second in yards per route run. And that's the other part about this. People talk so much about his ability to stretch the field. He's a triple level threat. Like, he can win in the short, intermediate, and deep. He was second in yards per route run in intermediate targets, and he was top 16 in pass rating on short and intermediate targets. That's the home run swing that I want to take later in drafts. So people are going to gift me Jameson Williams because they're like, well, I don't know about the ACL. Maybe he plays. I don't really care if he plays the first 5-6 weeks. It doesn't matter to me. I'm just going to put him on my bench whenever he's healthy and he's playing full snaps. Just going to watch the talent just bloom and blossom. It's going to be beautiful.
We literally just saw a young Lions receiver last year not do much early in the year and then appear on like the third most championship teams across all of fantasy football because he had such a big December. That was, of course, Amon-Ra St. Brown. I could totally see Jameson Williams being that guy. Obviously, not contributing early for a different reason with the injury, but it's very easy to paint that picture of him being an absolute stud for your championship teams in December. Erickson, who's your guy in this tier?
I'm going to go with Josh Palmer, wide receiver for the Los Angeles Chargers. Saw him average 7 targets per game as a rookie. Scored a touchdown in his 3 games with at least a 60% snap share. So I like that he was able to fill in for both Mike Williams and Keenan Allen at times last year. And if one of those guys gets banged up, like, Palmer's going to be the next guy in line to see the requisite snap share to put up fantasy numbers in one of the NFL's most prolific passing offenses. So I just want pieces of good offenses. Josh Palmer proved that he could do it. I know that we take shots sometimes on guys that, especially like with rookies, and I think rookies are usually good or better bets to kind of hit, you know, later on during the season, kind of like with Jameson Williams. But I think Palmer, the fact that he just showed it last year that he could be, that he could deliver when given an opportunity to do so, you know, 71st percentile separation rate, which was actually the same as Keenan Allen was last year, 92nd percentile separation rate against single coverage. So he's a versatile guy. He can play inside and play outside. So yeah, I like guys on good offenses. And, you know, we've seen before where there are offenses with quarterbacks that can support 3 receivers. You know, it was the Rams offense for a while. We saw the Bengals offense do it at one point. So if the Chargers are that number one ranked offense, like a lot of us could easily see playing out, like, Palmer could be someone that we're weekly starter every single week, flex appeal or wide receiver 3.
Jameson Williams was ranked 62nd at the position. Josh Palmer ranked 74th. Right now in half point PPR rankings. If you want to check those rankings, by the way, fantasypros.com/rankings. You can see all of our expert consensus rankings from all these experts across the industry. Half point PPR, PPR, standard, dynasty. We've got them all there for you. fantasypros.com/rankings. Let's move on to our tight end breakouts. We're going to start with tier 2 again. The names in this tier are George Kittle, Darren Waller, Dalton Schultz, TJ Hockenson, Dallas Goedert, Zach Ertz. Erickson, we started with Debro for the receivers. I'll start with you here on the tight ends.
Yeah, I'm going to go with TJ Hockenson here, and we're going to go down another thought experiment. So, you know, what if instead of Hockenson and Swift getting hurt at the end of last year, it was Swift and Amon-Ra St. Brown that got hurt? You know, would we be talking about Hockenson as the guy that had this monster season to end the year and won league championships? Because based on what he was doing up to that point, I think that was well within his range of outcomes through 13 weeks. TJ Hockenson, 6th in points per game, 5th in targets per game, 1st in route participation, 3rd in target share, 3rd in air yard share. So all elite numbers at the tight end position across the board. And if you look at what he did from a ceiling perspective, again, referencing the Boomer Bust report on fantasypros.com, 42% top 6 finisher rate last season, ranked 5th ahead of Darren Waller and ahead of Dalton Schultz. So he actually flashed a ceiling that we didn't even see from guys like Waller and Schultz to an extent. So, and that was a massive upgrade from the year prior where he was at 25% in terms of a top 6 finisher rate. So he flashed a higher ceiling. And I think the biggest part about TJ Hockenson is he's cheaper than he was last year. Like, I think we all projected, or at least myself, I think I was just a year early on Hockenson. You know, I projected him to kind of have this massive breakout, and that ended up being Mark Andrews that had the massive breakout last year, your guy, Ryan. But this year, Hockenson is going later than he was last year. And all he did last year was get better at everything. Like, his numbers improved across the board. So I like taking the discount on TJ Hockenson. And as, look, we all want tight ends to break out like right away, but we say it over and over and over again. It's like, takes time with these tight ends. Like, it's not just year 1, year 2. And as much as we all want it to happen, it takes time. And even with Mark Andrews, a a lot of us were a year early on Mark Andrews. And then he finally broke out. It's like, oh, okay, we missed it. And he was cheaper than the year prior. So I think Hockenson kind of follows a similar pattern. And with question marks about how the target share is going to kind of operate with Jameson Williams, if he comes back, you know, how will that affect ASB? I mean, Hockenson's still the guy there in the middle of the field with the tight end position. And we've seen Jared Goff fuel a guy like Tyler Higbee before. So I think that Hockenson is someone that we could definitely see continue to ascend and potentially be an elite tight end this year.
Hockenson currently ranked 7th among tight ends in half-point PPR. Ranked 6th is Debro's guy.
Look, it's Dalton Schultz time. It's going to happen, guys. I have him ranked so ridiculously high. Like, I put Schultz above George Kittle. And the reasons for it is, George Kittle is in a run-first offense, and Dalton Schultz, I talked about Dallas, they're going to throw the ball. We're going to see that happen again this year. Look, you're going to see Dalton Schultz step up as the number two option in this Dallas passing attack. Last year, he flashed the efficiency to do so, 12th in yards per route run. The matchups also, and a lot of these matchups we talk about, I'm not going to give you stats about saying, well, these teams gave up a lot of fantasy points to tight ends last year. It's not sticky. That's not what I'm talking about. What I am going to tell you is that looking at the defensive schemes that a lot of the teams that he's going to play, six, in fact, right here, that have played a lot of zone coverage, at least two of their corners rank inside the top 50 in zone coverage snaps last year. So 59% of their snaps or higher zone coverage. This is really instrumental for Dalton Schultz, considering he was 9th in yards per route run and 63% of his target share came against zone coverage. And if you're looking at all these different stats for Dallas, I mean, this is straight from my team series that I just started with Philly's out there, Dallas is out there. Those are live on the site, but I'm massively into Dalton Schultz. I think that the things that we want for these breakout tight ends, path to a large target share. Okay. CeeDee Lamb's there. And who else are we worried about? Okay. Michael Gallup is maybe starting the year on the pup. We don't know what's up with him coming off the ACL. Then you have Jalen Tolbert and James Washington. I mean, come on. That screams he is going to be the number two option. Then I talked about the matchups, and he has shown us the talent to put up efficiency numbers last season. Yeah, we're going to see Dalton Schultz take another step forward. I think he's going to step into that elite tier of tight ends, and I get he's going in the 5th, 6th round of a lot of best ball drafts. I'll pay that price all day for this year's Mark Andrews.
You know, I was going to ask, yeah, when I looked at this tier, sort of the first names that come to mind kind of obviously are George Kittle and Darren Waller, just because we've seen them be elite tight ends before. Neither of you guys picked either of those two, but you both kind of address that in your answers, how even if you were to assume health for Kittle or that Waller remains a big piece of the offense, even with Devontae Adams there, you guys are still taking these two ahead of them as a better chance of breaking out. So definitely buying in early on these guys. Let's move to tier three. Dawson Knox, Pat Freiermuth, Mike Gesicki, Cole Kmet, Hunter Henry, Noah Fant, Robert Tonyan. Erickson, who is your pick?
Yeah, so I cheated, if you didn't notice
that. You'll notice I didn't actually say the name of the guy you picked.
Because I didn't believe that any of those guys in that tier were worthy. Like, I'm sorry. It was the only guy that I did think was worthy, D-Bro picked as his guy. So that's why I couldn't go in there and say Cole Kmet, spoiler. So I went with Irv Smith Jr., because I think that the Minnesota Vikings offense is one that I want all of. Like, this offense is going to be one of the most fantasy-friendly offenses you could imagine, with the new offensive coordinator coming in, Kevin O'Connell coming from the Los Angeles Rams, and Irv Smith's obviously coming off the injury-lost season, but he took a lot of steps forward in 2020, finished 12th in PFF receiving grade, 7th in yards per reception. And I just think that he's going to play an every down role in this Rams offense. You look at that role last year with the Rams, it was Tyler Higbee, operated as the number one tight end. He ran a route on 76% of the team's dropbacks. That was 7th highest in the NFL. And I found a very high correlation between tight end production and tight ends that are on the field. Like, that's like one of the biggest hurdles you just need to do. Are you on the field running routes? Like, that's like, it's such a massive hurdle. It seems so simple, but the way that some tight ends are used is just they're not running enough routes. If you're only running a route on 50% of the dropbacks, it's just really hard for you to be a fantasy producer. I know that was a big problem with George Kittle during the beginning of the season. He just wasn't running enough routes because they're like, man, this guy's great blocker. Let's keep having him block. It's like, no, like Irv Smith, not the blocking type of tight end. We look at Conklin, what he did last year as that number one tight end in this offense, tight end 15 in fantasy. So even if you just you know, take what Conklin did last year, give it to Irv Smith. You're looking at tight end 15 with room to grow in this offense that I think is ascending, is going to be one to reckon with in 2022.
Irv Smith ranked 17th at the position right now. Again, actually at the top of tier four. D-Bro, thank you for actually sticking to the assignment and picking somebody in tier three. You went with Cole Kmet, as Erickson mentioned, currently ranked 13th.
Warmly, don't throw a man shade. We had to talk about the let Irv swerve movement that needed to happen. So,
but
no
we're
going to
do tier four. You could have just waited till tier four.
I know that, but he should be ranked higher. I have Irv Smith ranked higher. So, you know, we could attack it from that scenario. But if we're not, yes, Cole Kmet was the low hanging fruit here. And the fact of it is, Cole Kmet is the Miles Sanders of tight ends. Like, he's got to score a touchdown this year, right, guys? Like, it's going to happen, huh? Like, last year, Cole Kmet, zero, nada, zilch, no touchdowns. And everybody knows that. But that was so incredibly rare, it's ridiculous. Since 2017, you have 30 tight ends across 59 individual seasons that have garnered at least 80 targets. Cole Kmet's obviously in the sample. Cole Kmet is the only tight end in that entire sample to not score a freaking touchdown. The only one! He's going to get volume this year. The efficiency numbers are not great, but I think raw volume is going to trump everything this year for him. He was 11th in target share, 8th in targets, and 12th in receiving yards. We could see all those numbers go up this year. So yeah, give me Cole Kmet. I'm going to get a lot of exposure to him in best ball and redraft and all of the formats. I have a ton of them in Dynasty.
Obviously, this is a different position. Melvin Gordon plays running back, but you think back to his rookie year, zero touchdowns despite plenty of touches. The next year after that, 10 rushing touchdowns. So 10 might be a lot to expect from Kmet, but I think he's a great pick as a potential breakout, especially if that rises at all in any sort of positive regression, you're going to be getting value there with where he's going. In drafts, let's move to tier four, our last tier for the tight ends. Too many names to read here, but this is a combination of guys that we're waiting on to take the leap, like David Njoku, Evan Engram, Logan Thomas, or some really young guys with a chance to break out, Brevin Jordan, or Erickson's Irv Smith. Erickson, who do you have here besides Irv Smith?
My second tier four tight end is Gerald Everett. Mount Everett is about to kaboom this year, guys. Like, I don't get it, man. I don't know why people don't like Gerald Everett. He's in the Chargers offense, and I'm taking my shots. You know, if Mike Williams or Keenan Allen go down, like, I'm going to have Everett or Josh Palmer, like, ready to go in the wings on my bench. So if you look at him last year, he was actually really productive when Russell Wilson came back from his injury. He was tight end 9 in fantasy points per game from weeks 10 through 16. He's coming off a career year in receptions and receiving yards, which just no one seems to care about. Dusty Jared Cook was tight end 16 last year. And Gerald Everett is better than Jared Cook in any way, shape, or form at his young age. You know, he's someone that has looked really good in terms of efficiency marks, in terms of yards after the catch per reception, in terms of missed tackles forced per reception. So he can make plays with the ball in his hands. And he's going from an offense that ranked dead last in passing attempts per game to the offense that ranked 3rd in passing attempts per game last year. Also ranked 9th in targets to tight ends overall in 2021. So I think we're looking at Gerald Everett as tight end 16 is kind of like his floor. Okay, if he just does what Jared Cook did last year, like Jared Cook had weeks last year where you'd stream him and play him. But then you get more to the table. Everett brings more to the table just as a more athletic, younger tight end that has flash big time potential. And they gave him a decent deal. Like, it wasn't a 1-year deal. He got a 2-year deal with the Los Angeles Chargers. So I think he's going to be the starting tight end. And I've been waiting for the Mount Everett, you know, thing to kaboom for a while at this point, and I'm not going to fade him now that he's on the best offense he's been on. So give me Gerald Everett.
Maybe the biggest takeaway from this whole conversation so far is just how many Chargers we've mentioned. Mike Williams, Josh Palmer, now Gerald Everett.
Draft guys and good offenses, guys. Like, yes. That's the mantra, baby.
And it works out more often than not. Everett currently ranked 21st among tight ends, as Erickson says. His floor is 16th with a much higher ceiling than that. D-Bro, I'm going to let you pronounce your player.
Well, staying on the we like players and good offenses, give me Albert Okwuegbunam. I really want a lot of exposure. And I understand the target competition. We've talked about, okay, people love Judy. People love Sutton. Tim Patrick is everybody's just lust this year. He is that pick where everybody just wants to garner towards him. And I'm like, I would much rather have Albert Okwuegbunam later in drafts. Because if this offense is what we think it's going to be, and I understand all the reasons for target competition, but his efficiency metrics scream he could be really, really good amongst all tight ends with 15 or more targets over the last two seasons. He's been 5th and 8th in yards per route run, 4th and 7th in yards after catch per reception. These are crazy good numbers. And now we're adding Russell Wilson, and everybody's like, well, I need to fight over Jerry Jeudy and Cortland Sutton, and oh, you can't forget about Tim Patrick. Can't forget about him. Albert O is going way too late in drafts. Like, we're talking about love the Chargers. We mention all the parts or pieces, and if this is like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers of 2022, where they support all these different wide receivers and a really, really good tight end in fantasy, you can't say that the Denver Broncos couldn't it be the exact same thought experiment. So, Albert Okwuegbunam. Yep. Adding to the list.
You know, as soon as the Broncos made the trade for Russell Wilson, and particularly since they got rid of Noah Fant in the process, it felt like the instant reaction was, oh, wow, Albert O season. Why do you think, Debo, right now he's ranked 18th, why do you think he's not a tier higher, maybe even two tiers higher right now in the pre-draft season?
I think one of it is they're saying, okay, well, there's only so many targets to go around. And if we believe people love all these other wide receivers, heck, they like, okay, Melvin Gordon, Javonte Williams are going to get targets and say, okay, somebody's got to get squeezed. I think that Albert O is getting the squeeze, and I don't think it's really justified considering if the passing volume is there. Hell, he might not even need the passing volume, considering the line, the demarcation for a really, really good tight end in fantasy is such a low bar. He could also get there by red zone usage and touchdowns. Walking out of this season, if we don't believe that, okay, Jerry Jeudy is a massive touchdown getter, okay, Tim Patrick maybe isn't a huge red zone threat if the team throws a lot in the red zone, he could walk out with double-digit touchdowns, and if he only gets 500-600 yards receiving, still pay off at wherever he's going as ADP. But I really think it's the squeeze. I think that people love all the other parts and pieces of this offense, and somebody has to get pushed out, and people love Tim Patrick so damn much that Albert Okwuegbunam is the one getting the pinch.
I also think too that his ADP and rank fell because the Broncos drafted a tight end, you know, they drafted Greg Dulcich. And look, I mean, I'm sure he's a fine man, fine young player, but he's a rookie tight end. Like, we don't see rookie tight ends, like, do anything. And the fact that people are just, oh, well, now you can't draft Albert O because this rookie tight end is going to take away all of his opportunities. And I just don't think that that's necessarily going to be the case. I understand the argument where, you know, he's drafted by this new regime and they don't have any allegiance to Albert Okwuegbunam. So I understand it from that perspective, but I also understand that Nathaniel Hackett loves to run two tight end sets. Like, he was used that a lot in his time spent in Green Bay. So we're going to see both those guys on the field. And if you look at the metrics in terms of target rate per route run, that's a battle that Albert O should win. So I think that I like him now more. I mean, I was almost kind of like on the fringe of taking him where he was going, you know, as a tight end 12. I was like, yikes, like, this is a little scary. Okay, now he's affordable. So I think it's worth the upside. And then you just cut bait with him as one of your last round picks. If he's just, He's out in the target squeeze, as Debro kind of alluded to.
I love the point that you made there, Erickson, about the personnel usage. Green Bay has been top three in 12 personnel usage. And I don't think that people are really marrying this to what does that mean for the other wide receivers? If you've got two tight ends on the field a lot, one of those wide receivers is not going to be a full-time snap player. I don't think that's Cortland Sutton getting the squeeze. So you're really like saying, okay, who is it? Is it Jerry Jeudy, who is most likely playing the slot? Probably. But could it be Tim Patrick too? And they just roll like Sutton and Jeudy in two tight end sets? If that's the case, you're looking at the wrong player getting the squeeze. It could be Jeudy or Patrick and not Albert O.
Let's dig into the listener mailbag.
We are up against the clock a bit. I do want to squeeze in one mailbag question because I think it's a good one. At JP Match or Mac asks, Elliott, Jacobs, Dobbins, Etienne, Mitchell, Sanders, CEH, Dylan, Edmonds, Hunt, is this year's RB dead zone really that dead? Erickson, I'll start with you.
I mean, there's a lot of dead zone backs that you listed off there. I mean, there were a couple that I liked, but yeah, I think that it's still there. There are still a lot of running backs that are getting inflated ADPs based on projected volume and based on what they've done in the past. Like, you can't rank Ezekiel Elliott outside of, you know, a certain range just because of, you know, looking at any type of projection system that you set up. Like, Zeke is going to project anywhere between, like, he's going to be a top 20 running back. Like, it's impossible to run the numbers and be like, well, Zeke's not a top 20 running back. It's just impossible to do. But when you look at actually how the season can actually play out, and is Zeke actually helping you win? That's the biggest thing here, is these RB2s don't make a difference. Like, it doesn't matter if this guy is finishing as a top 15 running back this week, and then they finish 13th and they finish 17th. Like, at the end of the season, it looks all like dandy. Like, oh, great, Zeke was RB6. Like, that was awesome. Like, anyone that owns Zeke, I had a lot of Zeke last year, and it wasn't a fun ride, especially after week one, man, when Tony Pollard was out playing him in, on primetime against the Bucks. I was like, oh, no, like, why did I tell people to draft Ezekiel Elliott? And luckily, you know, he stayed healthy and got there at the end of the season. But I wouldn't look back at that take and be like, oh, I was right about Zeke. Like, he smashed. It's like, no, like, he really didn't. He just got there because he didn't get hurt. So I think there is, but there are certain running backs in that range that, like a Travis Etienne, I think Kareem Hunt actually goes a little bit later than the RB dead zone, but there are running backs that, you know, can catch passes that have paths to higher ceiling. It's because of the unknown factor. Like, I'm almost would rather take a shot on someone that is either going to finish as a top 10 running back or like a top or outside like the top 24. Like, I guess I don't want to just settle on solid RB2, like David Montgomery, basically. I want to shoot for the ceiling with a running back that can be top 5, top 7, top 8, or just take the L, move on, and just try to find running backs on the waiver wire.
And that's a great insight on the running back side. But Debro, I want to ask you about the other side. The whole reason the concept of the running back dead zone exists is because you say, instead of a running back, take a third wide receiver, take a tight end that you really believe, take whoever. So from that other perspective, I mean, are these running backs good enough to consider passing up on a lot of really good looking wide receivers?
Yeah, I mean, that's really one of the other huge takeaways here is hammer the wide receiver position. Starting, I mean, I wrote this up in my perfect draft. This is also in my how do you attack the early rounds and middle rounds, which are in the redraft kit right now live. You start hammering wide receivers at round 3, and you don't stop until it dries up. Like, round 3 through 6, you can get a ton of upside wide receivers. We saw Cooper Kupp emerge as a league winner from this realm last year. There are so many good wide receivers that are going in this range. If you're going to go to the running back position, really, you're not looking at these veteran guys that the best you're hoping for is that they hold on to their jobs. And that's the recipe for failure. If you want to attack the running back position in that range, you have to be extremely specific about who you're going for, having youth, efficiency, and upside on basically those are the things that you're looking for, like Breece Hall, Travis Etienne, Cam Akers will fall to that. And yes, people will say, okay, well, the efficiency is not there. He's still locked inside of a top 5 offense, and the efficiency was there in his rookie season. So if he gets any of that back with longer offseason to prepare, yeah, absolutely. I'm gonna shy away from a lot of the running backs in that range and definitely go with the wide receivers, Ryan.
Thank you guys both for another awesome conversation today. I think everyone is coming away a little smarter, except for Joey P, because he wasn't even here. Please, everybody, remember all the great opportunities we mentioned on the show, including our signed Javonte Williams helmet giveaway and also your free credit at Pristine Auction. Most of all, thank you, the fans, for listening. For Debro and Erickson, I'm Ryan Warmly. We'll see you again soon.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/FantasyPros.
Also, before we go, could you guys hear the lawnmower next to my room?
Yep.
I didn't hear it.
Okay, well.
I heard it.
I was like, as soon as it started, I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, I heard it at one point where there's like a weed eater like,
yeah. Yeah, like that was bad.
Whacker. Classic, yeah. Classic landscaping going on during podcasts. That never happens.
Happens every damn time. It's like they're like, they look in your windows, they're like, all right, he's talking. Let's go.
Yeah. Wait for it. Wait for it. Go, go, go.
Yeah. He just hit the mute button.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
It's Freddie Prinze Jr. and Jeff Dye back in the ring. Wrestling with Freddie makes its triumphant return for an electrifying fourth season. Hey, Jeff. Are you ready to rumble our way into an all-new season of Wrestling with Freddy?
You better believe I have. I've been practicing my body slams, and I'm jacked.
All right, don't go injuring yourself now. We'll be highlighting the best stories and matches of the week in wrestling from AEW, WWE, and have one-on-one talks with the best talents in the world of pro wrestling.
Listen to Wrestling with Freddy on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.